time. I can actually get back on track now and start telling you useful stuff. Look, enough of the cheeseology. Let's get on with the show. What you're going to get from me, take about an hour, but it'll seem a lot longer. Quick overview of the phone. Get inside a guide to writing an XNA game. Some touch, some gesture, some accelerometer, some marketplace, some advertising, and some where to go next. One of the points I want to make that's really important to me is that everything you see, I'm giving the code away. If you go to robmiles.com/demos, you can get the code now. And I've also taken all the demos I've written over the last year or so and put those up there and indexed them so you'll get the slides and the demos. There's nothing I'm showing you can't have the source for. Okay, so everything you can take away and try and get rich with. A very quick word about the Windows Phone hardware. It's very, very good. Okay, the details are on there for you to drool over if you like, but from a game writer's point of view, plenty of power, acceleration on the graphical side, a good quality camera, some rather nice sensors. I wish I had a bigger dot. That dot's a bit small. There you go. Capacitive touch. I'll explore some of these things in the talk, and we'll see where we go from there. It's a great place to write games. Performance in 3D is good. I'm not going to be doing much in 3D in this talk. I've got some 3D demos on my deck. I'm keeping the focus on the phone sensors and integration with those and just getting started with the XNA framework. So that's where I'm going, but there's a lot of good stuff in the phone, and I'll be touching on most of this as we go through. XNA is... Anyone know what XNA stands for? That's right, that's about it. I think I'll give you a book for that. I'm so determined to get rid of these. Apparently they've got hundreds. A big warehouse and an unhappy... No. It doesn't stand for anything, apparently. There you go. But it's a really great place to write games. It's fully object managed. And it's a really, my actual day job at the University of Hull, I teach programming. My job is crushing dreams and twisting young minds. That's what I do for a living. It's a really good way to learn how to deploy a bunch of resources using an object framework. And so from a teaching point of view, if you are an educator, it's a great place to get people into programming. You have 3D and 2D support built in. And you've got common behaviors across the three platforms, Windows PC, Xbox 360, and phone. And it's perfectly possible to get a single game engine and set of assets and deploy that across all three platforms. I've done this. In a single Visual Studio solution, you can have a game project for the phone, one for the Xbox, and one for the PC, and they'll all just sit together, and it works extremely well. So it's a nicely put together place to work. In terms of how the game works, well, in XNA, a game works the same way as they work in pretty much any other environment. You do basically three things. At the start, your loading screen is where you fetch the textures, the models, the scripts, the bits to make it work. And once you've got those, you then run as fast as you can, updating your game world and drawing the game world. So you've basically got an update behavior and a render behavior once you've got your assets in, and that's it. Okay? As far as XNA is concerned, we have a direct mapping between these behaviors and the actual methods in an XNA game class. So we have an initialize and load content method to start things off, and then an update method and a draw method that actually drive the game forward. And your job as a game developer is just fill those methods in. So you make a brand new empty template, you get brand new empty draw update methods, you drop code into those, and away you go. And it's as simple as that. It really is. So we just fire up Studio, make a brand new game project. The XNA folk in the room will know this already, but it's very, very easy to do. If you're in Silverlight, you may have to make a timer or dispatch a timer to get your game loop firing up so you can make things happen. In XNA, game loops is how it works. Everything is polled. You just go and get stuff from the inputs and deal with it that way. And so what we're going to do, I've heard this cloud thing apparently going to be all the rage. It's going to be catching on. So what I thought I'd start with a cloud. Look, there it is. You wouldn't believe how long it takes to draw a convincing-looking cloud. Or perhaps you would. That's That was the hardest part of all the demos are all new, and there is no cheese, but we do have lots of cloud. So I got my cloud picture, and effectively, I thought, let's see where I can take my cloud. And so drew the cloud, and this is how, in my game, I define where the cloud's going to be. There's my texture, which is my picture of a cloud, and there's my vector 2 that tells me where it is. And so that's it. My game starts, I fetch my cloud, I tell the game where it is, and then I use update and draw to manipulate that. And so this is the simplest possible game you can make, pretty much. And this is my load content, one of the methods I mentioned at the start. This one makes a sprite batch, which is a mechanism for fitting together the draw behaviors in the draw method, and it also then sets the cloud top left-hand corner, 0, 0, and then goes off and gets the texture for you. Now, the cloud ends, it's just a PNG file. Don't use GIF. GIF doesn't work, but everything else pretty much does. I use PNG because I've got transparency in my cloud. I've got the frilly edges. So that comes in from a resource that I've loaded into Visual Studio. As far as you're concerned, you don't have to care how the resources get onto your platform. Xbox game, Windows Phone game, PC game, they're all batched up and then pushed into the device magically behind the scenes for you. And the content load method has a whole bunch of generic behaviors. You can fetch audio, sound samples, 3D models, all kinds of stuff. And if you want to, you can write your own content importers as well. I wrote one for text so I could bring in dictionaries for word games, and it's a very, very easy thing to do. And that just plugs into the system and then pushes your content around the program, the system that you're making. So it's very, very easy to do. This is my draw. Rather helpfully, XNA draws the screen a rather pleasant cornflower blue color for me automatically, and then I just have to begin batching up my draw operations, draw the cloud, put it somewhere, and shine a white light on it, and then away I go. And so this is going to basically put a cloud in the sky. And so I better show you how this works, just because you've no reason to believe what I'm telling you. I mean, I am English after all. Ha, ha, ha. I have got some emergency jokes. I'll tell you my favorite joke in all the world. I guess you're pretty well calibrated by now, which is that a horse walks into a bar, and the barman says, "Why the long face?" Now, that is my favorite joke in all the world. So basically, people, it's downhill from now on. What I do is I tell Studio, please deploy it to the emulator. And one of the things when you do this is that now what's going to happen is when I run the program up, it'll start up an emulation of the phone on the platform and then deploy my game and run it. Now, interesting sidelines. If you're a Windows mobile developer, this is not as high quality emulation as the mobile devices used to have in the old days, because it actually is running 8086 code, not the MIPS code that lives inside the phone, or RISC code. In fact, it's the other one, isn't it? ARM. My brain's not working. Now, you'll notice that my cloud is in the wrong place, because here, this is Rob. His cloud's in the wrong place. But I can fix that by tipping the emulator over onto its side. By default, a game wakes up and it runs the game in landscape orientation with the controls on the right. But you can control that. And there's my cloud in the sky, looking good. Not worth a round of applause, obviously. But it is early days. We'll play with this. I'll leave that going and just drop back to the deck now. So you've seen a simple cloud. Little bit of extra bits and pieces. If you want to play with orientation, absolutely go for it. You can specify in your graphics configuration how you want the game to be oriented. And if you select a bunch of these using OR, then the game will now adjust as you tip it automatically. You'll have to deal with some aspects of that, because you may need to resize or reposition objects. And if you want to deal with these things, then basically you can hook up an interrupt handler, an event, which will fire when they tip the phone. So if you want to actually have a really impressive display that swivels round when they tip it, you can get messages fired, and you can then actually read back what the orientation is and do something sensible on the back of that. So to be quite honest, what Robert does is he just nails the orientation to the one he wants to use, and then the rest of the world has to deal with that. But to show off your orientation smarts, if you want to, try and get the badge orientation badge. Do you have that in America? No. Apparently not. Okay. Then you can do that, and it all works terribly well. So that's orientation. One thing I will mention, which is kind of important, there's no buttons on the phone you can press to control gameplay. If you're used to having a gamepad or a keyboard, none of that, I'm afraid. You have to use accelerometer or touch, and I'll cover both of these in a minute or so. If you use accelerometer, then the frame of reference is always as if the phone is being held in portrait mode, up in front of you that way. So if you do tip the phone and you've got orientation changes being managed, you'll have to change the way you map your accelerometer inputs yourself. Everything else is fixed for you. The origin of your graphics will change, but you have to deal with the fact acceleration is now going in a different direction, which can be a bit of a pain, but it's eminently doable. One thing you can do, and this is completely and utterly magical, by default, the phone is 800 by 480 pixels, which is a nice high-res screen, very good. You can ask for other sizes, say 240 by 400. If you do that, the hardware automatically scales your image for you, and it aliases as well. So it'll take your little screen and blow it up to a big one automatically. This is incredibly useful when you want to get more performance out of the platform, because what it means is that you can effectively halve the resolution of your screen, and the user will not notice. They'll see that it'll be a little bit more blur, but it'll still be very playable and very great fun. So I've taken programs that chug a bit and made them extremely playable simply by changing the size of the screen. And it also means, as far as you're concerned, if you're hardwiring your asset sizes to a particular dimensions of screen, then what that means is that you can then request that size when you run the thing on the platform, and it doesn't matter what device or what size it's got, the system just takes it in its stride and keeps going. So you've got two nice things, a useful way of getting a performance boost and a nice way of actually making sure that you're future-proof in terms of how your game's going to look. At the moment, our cloud's being drawn 200 by 100 pixels. There are ways in which I can scale the drawing. I can make things bigger or smaller. That's easy enough as well. But this is extremely useful. If you ask for a different aspect ratio screen to the one the phone supports, you get black bands above and below or left and right. It'll do all that for you automatically on the fly, no performance hit for you. So you can take a game that's chugging a bit and really make it fly just by tweaking the screen size. One thing I'll also mention, the phone always has a status bar, which is pretty much always displayed. If you have the color scheme set to light, the background light in your profile, in your settings for your phone, you'll see this white bar will come up here with your signal strength and your battery power. That can be distracting in a game, so there's a flag you can set to basically say turn that off, and at that point you get the whole screen. You see, if you look very carefully what's happening here, my 480 by 100 is being scaled and black banded to fit in this piece, and they're leaving room for the status bar on the side. The hardware's doing that for us. But I think it looks nicer without that, so you can just ask for full screen and away it goes. And in fact, what Robert tends to put inside his games is this little method here, which effectively says landscape left, I'm playing it that way, I'm going to have a full screen please, and 800 by 480. If you download the demos, this code's all in there, so you can take it and flip it, landscape or portrait, whatever you want, and just use it. I can make my cloud drift. Okay, it could float on the breeze. Oh, quick man. Quick man, I'm impressed. There you go. Everyone's suddenly woken up. Oh, more cheese, right. Oh, prizes. Got two left. Okay, right. So, things to bear in mind if you're an XNA person, update on the phone is called 30 times a second, not 60 as in XNA. But what happens is that every time update gets run, we take a vector, which is our speed. At the moment, it's 1.5 pixels in the X direction, nothing in the Y, and we add it to the current position. And the vector type in XNA is nicely overloaded. It'll support all this, so I can just add vectors, and away it goes. So I do that. That thing runs at 30 hertz, and my cloud drifts across the screen. And I've got this. I've got it all covered. It's all under complete control. Now the screen's working, I can stop shaking. So we'll just get rid of that one, and we'll go into the next demo. And as I say, all these demos are all available for you to pull down and do what you like with. If you make a game which is based on them and earn an absolute fortune, then I'll I'd appreciate it. Just a few quid, you know. Send me a few quid along. It'd be rather nice. It'd be a friendly thing to do. So what'll happen now is it's deploying that, and in it goes, and it'll now my cloud just drifts across the screen rather nicely. I've added a little small improvement, which is that when it gets to the right-hand edge, I just pick the cloud up and put it back again. So as we'll see in a minute or two, it'll hit the end and then go round again. Still no reason to clap, absolutely, but it is a moving cloud. It's a bit boring, so what I can do is I can... This is the kind of thing you can do which is rather sweet. If I go into the game's running, everything's chugging along quite nicely, so I basically put a breakpoint there, okay? And the program stops. And I go into Mr. Immediate, and I go cloud speed. I can't type, of course. I'll sit down. I can't type standing up. That's better. Cloud speed dot x equals 10. Yeah. Now, I can do this. Now, this would work if I'm hitting the code in the device, in the phone, in my Xbox 360, if I was writing for the Xbox 360, or on the PC. So now I've made the value of X for cloud speed 10 now. Hit return. And so my cloud should go a lot faster once I clear the breakpoint away. So let's see this. Okay, baby, drift. Let's go. Whoosh, see? So I've got a much faster cloud now. So the nice thing about it that I wanted to show you was just how easy it is to debug and play with the apps inside the device. So I can stop things, play with variables, put breakpoints in. All the good tools that you're used to using on the PC, they're all in the device or emulator. It all just works. Great stuff. So I'll stop that, because people are starting to follow it along on the front row. And I'll go back to presentation. And we've got a drifting cloud. I've only got 5 more demos and 40 more minutes. Okay, so... Right, one cloud is fine, okay? Do we have more than one cloud? In real, do we have... No, there's only one. The next cloud will be on Mars, won't it? I digress. What I've done here, I want to have lots of these things on the screen. I've made a little interface called iSprite, and it's got 2 members, draw and update. I pass them game references so they can do things like add points if things get killed and go off and find sprite batches and bits and pieces. Then I make a list of these. And so now I have a list of game components. I'm effectively, if I want to have 50 aliens and a spaceship, then this is where I'm headed. All my aliens will be iSprites, and I'll put them all in the game sprite collection. And then when I come to actually process them, I'll just run through them. I made a cloud sprite. Here it is. Has a texture, position, and speed. A draw and update method you've already seen. And a little constructor where I tell it, this is your texture, this is your position, this is your speed. This is the basis, folks, of any kind of sprite engine you'd like to make. And what we'll do in a minute is we'll have a look at how this fits together and the kind of things you can do. So this is my cloud class, and then I'm going to put a few random clouds up there. So I'm going to say, place it somewhere randomly on the screen, give it a random speed, and then just construct the thing and add it to my list. So I can start producing enormous numbers of sprites now, which is quite sweet. And then in my update method, I just have a for each that iterates through all the objects in my list of things in the game and update them, update my parent, and then away I go. And draw works exactly the same. And so now I can have drifting clouds, again, very, very easy to do. So drop back into studio, put you to sleep, and go back into my demos. So This is the kind of, if you're writing a 2D sprite-based game, then this is how you do it. So all you have to do now is think of new types and behaviors for your objects. And if I fire this one up, I just have to say don't deploy to the device yet, please. Save that for later. Run it across. So now we'll have lots and lots of clouds, and I'll be drifting across. And everybody will clap and be happy, and the screen will keep working. So there you go. Whole bunch of this. Oh, thank you. Now, this is kind of okay. But one of the tricks you can play in games is, if I stop this, if you look at my code, there are tricks you can play with people playing games. One of the tricks is called parallax scrolling. If you're in a train going down the tracks, the stuff that's close to your window whizzes past real fast. Things a long way away move more slowly. So what I can do is I can slightly change the way I set the speed of my thing. So rather than setting the speed on the back of a random thing, I'm going to give them a speed which is effectively proportional to how close they are to the camera, because XNA draws in the order you give it the objects. So the back ones get drawn first, the front ones get put on top of them. So now this, I'm taking the value of I, which is counted through my sprites, and I'm just saying divide it by, well, 6 seemed to work quite nicely. If I run this, then what you will see now is that it actually looks like I'm in a vehicle traveling past things. And one more trick I can play to make that even more convincing is to make the clouds close to me big and the clouds further away small. And so this is not a 3D game. I think I may have over-egged the clouds a bit. I think a few fewer clouds would work better. But can you see where I'm going with this? So we now have a very, very simple sprite. We've now got lots of them. You can go kind of nuts, although I wouldn't advise it. I think I've got 100 or so. My variable here will actually let me do that. I've got a definition. I've got 100. So if I make it 1,000, it might actually grind. But we'll see what it does. Let's go for... Actually, the ones at the front are going to go, whoa! Yeah, because I have some small modifications to make there. So let's call this a work in progress and move on. Okay, and that's the wrong one, Rob. That's better. So we can make clouds drift. Now, again, each of the game types has got a draw and update. If you do this for real, there's one third behavior I'd advise you to have a go at adding. Anyone know what the third behavior should be? The third method, draw, update, and... Say again? I have one called reset. When the game starts, put all the clouds back to where they were. So all my objects have a reset behavior that picks them up and puts them back to where they should be at the start of the game. But apart from that, this is a pretty solid starting point. Okay, we've got clouds moving around. Let's go cloud bursting. Okay. Now, it turns out this is very easy to do. The phone can actually detect and track up to 4 touch events on the basic hardware. I was thinking to myself, 4 sounds a bit measly. Why only 4? Then I thought, okay, I'm holding the phone in one hand. So I've only got the 5 to go at, unless I start doing this as well, which is not going to work too well. So you get up to 4 touch events. They're uniquely tracked so that you can actually monitor a particular touch event for its entire lifetime. And what I can do here is just basically have a cloud check to see if it's been touched. Okay, and if it does, it should burst. So there's my touch location collection. And what's going to happen is my update method, which is called 30 times a second, says to the touch panel, hey, can you give me all your update states, please, and stick them in this collection. And then I update each sprite. And inside the sprite, my update method goes, okie dokie, I'm going to go through all the touch items that the touch location sensor has given me. I'm going to look for the ones that are flagged as pressed, because that's I'm interested in when the finger hits the thing. I'm not dragging clouds around yet. I'm just touching them. And I'm saying, okay, if the cloud contains this position, that's an XY coordinate pair, play the pop sound and set the flag burst to true. So this is my update behavior for within my cloud that detects when I've touched the cloud and I can then pop it. And it's as simple as that. The only small piece of complication I had to add, this is my contains method. I give it a vector, and it effectively does a little bit of trig or math or whatever to say, okay, if it's off the left, it doesn't contain it. If it's off the right, it doesn't contain it. If it's above it, it doesn't contain it. And if it's below it, it doesn't contain it. Otherwise, return true. Now, I'm having a little bit of pain here because I'm positioning my sprites using vectors. If you're new to XNA and want an easy way to travel, you can also place things on the screen using rectangles. And if you do that, rectangles have got, they've got intersection, they've got contains, they've got all kinds of good stuff built in. I just rolled my own here, just 5 lines of code, and this thing returns true if the cloud contains a particular point. Is everyone okay with that? Lovely. Okay, so there's my sound effect. I haven't mentioned them until now. Pop is basically a WAV file that I pulled off the interwebs. And I'm loading this in the same way as I load my other content, but this time the load method's being the one for the sound effects being used. And that then puts it into a member of my game. and I call play to do that. If you've written Silverlight games, you will have seen this before, because in Silverlight you use the XNA framework to play the sound effects. If you haven't and you're wondering how to do it in Silverlight, you bring in the XNA framework and you do this. It's how it's done. And there are lots and lots of rather neat things you can do. If you get a handle to a sound effect called a sound effect instance, you can change the pitch, you can change the XY position of the sound, and you can do the volume as well, so you can make things move around to track where they are on the screen extremely easy. You have at least 64 simultaneous sound voices, but the way this works is basically it sits in memory and it plays the instant that you hit it. It's not like playing a song from the media library where it has to fetch it. This thing goes real quick. And so now we can burst some clouds. Again, the code, just the same. I've got my scrolling clouds. If I go back into Studio, I'll just get rid of that. And I keep starting up new versions, but that's just the way I roll, I'm afraid. One of the things that's interesting is that when Studio wakes up, it always likes to try and talk to the phone. And so I always have to do this. If I don't do it and I make a mistake, someone will win a book. So let's get this going. There's my load behavior now, which is effectively fetching my cloud, and then my pop sound. If I make it a little bit bigger, you can see the code that does that a little bit better. And so off we go. And again, the code you're seeing, you can have. And so now I have the basis of a very, very simple popping game where I can just... You can't quite... If I make my sound really loud... let's go for full volume. Oh, someone just signed in. That's a very witty name. So now, if you listen carefully, you can hear it popping. Now, sometimes I pop more than one at a time because I'm working through all the clouds down through the layers. Now, what I was thinking about is maybe I should fix that and just pop the top cloud. Then I'm thinking, no, maybe that's a skill shot. Maybe if you can pop several clouds with one go, you get extra points. And because I can control the different speeds, I can make the player try and wait for when the clouds all line up to get a skill shot where he can do that. So this is a silly little game, but you can pop clouds. One point I didn't make, which I'll show you in the code just right now, is that the burst flag is used by the cloud to decide when to draw. So if you look at the draw behavior now, the cloud does not draw himself if he's been popped. He just... skips that. So that's how your clouds disappear. This brings me back to my reset method requirement, because at the beginning of the game you have to put all the clouds back and unburst them. So that's what that code's for. So we now have a nice simple little popping game which you can play. You can make bubble wrap the same way if you want. There are actually apps on Marketplace that have got the old bubble wrap popping thing, and you've now got the code to do that. Just change the textures a bit. Have two textures for the thing, a popped texture and an amended texture. Just drop that across the screen, and you've got a bubble wrap game like that. The question is, when you're touching the screen, am I doing touchdown, touch up? What happens is you get a series of events. If I go into the next slide, then that might actually help. But it's a great question. You're quite right. It isn't like a keyboard. Effectively, the finger goes down, it moves around a bit, then it comes up, and you get a down event, a whole bunch of moved events, and an up event. So if you want to flick things or drag things or chase things, easy. And each event has a unique ID. So you can lob this thing into a dictionary and then pull it out later. So you can track where it's going. And so if you do that, that's fine. And it gives a very good low-level control. It's kind of hard work to code up, but it gives you can flick different things with different fingers. You can make in fact, one of my demos is a piano, where you can just touch and play chords, all that kind of stuff. Very easy to do, and all I was looking for is a pressed event. The other events were firing, and I was ignoring them, okay? Now, if you don't want to go to the hassle of tracking the events, you can use gestures. It sounds a bit rude. I learned gestures today, Mum. Oh, did you, Rob? That's nice. So what I want to do now is different game mechanic. We're flicking clouds around the sky to try and hit plants and water them. So that's what we're doing. And so I just say to the touch panel, hey, can you tell me about the flick gesture? And so the touch panel will now tell me when it detects a flick. Okay? There's about six other ones: tap, double tap, hold, vertical drag, horizontal drag, flick, and pinch. So if you don't want the hassle in your game of tracking the individual points, you can do it. But if you don't want to, just register for these and then read the events when you get them. And to get them, you just say, okay, do you have one of these for me? If you do, I'll read it, look at the type, and in the case of the gesture, I get a delta value, which is effectively a vector, which is the direction and speed of the gesture. Okay? So my vector is a delta, and I can take that, divide it by 100, that seems to work quite well, and just drop it straight on the cloud speed. So you've seen how the cloud moves because we have a vector we keep adding to its position. This just makes a new value for the vector, and that's it. I've flicked my cloud. Okay? And it really is that simple. And so now I've added a new sprite, which is my plant, and I'm drawing my plant, and as time goes by, my plant sprite dries out and becomes more transparent because you can play with opacity in the game. And if I don't flick a cloud onto it, it'll die, you see. This is the game mechanic that I did at 3 a.m, having drunk several bottles of Budweiser. It made a lot of sense. Actually, the worst thing you can do, a friend of mine did this, he drank half a bottle of whiskey, and he got one of these Star Trek, how to build your own starship CD-ROMs you could get a few years ago, and he thought he could build one. He was convinced, he was in his garden, I can make this. Moving on. Poor chap. Maybe he did, but I haven't seen him for a while. Maybe he did actually get one to go. It's possible. So what we're doing now is same cloud, same everything else. It's just that what I'm doing now is I'm actually moving it around the screen by flicking. And if I go into the emulator again and just fire this up, then the emulator only gives you one touch point, which is the mouse. If you have a multi-touch display or a laptop which supports multi-touch, you can use that straight through into the emulator. So if you do want to do multi-touch things, if you can find yourself a platform. So now, get hold of my cloud and flick it. And the idea is if it gets burst, it actually goes and repositions itself somewhere. But the actual flicking behavior is, it's good enough for a game. And the harder I flick it, the faster it goes, and the slower I flick it, that was too slow, Rob, the slower it moves. So that's very, very easy to do. And on the phone, it works very well. I can show you on the phone if you like, but I have better things to use the phone for, as you'll see in a minute or two. And as you can see, my plants are actually slowly decaying away, which is really sad. And so I'm going to lose. I mean, one of the things that annoys me, you write a game, and everybody else is better at it than you. Or your friends beat you at the game you wrote. So unfair. Look at the sprites, and you'll find that there's my interface, there's my cloud, and I now have a plant. And the plant has a dead flag, which if you're not dead, we draw you. And I have, I multiply the color by a floating point value 0 to 1, and that gives the opacity. If you've been doing XNA up until now, then XNA 4 is a bit of a change. It has pre-computed alphas. That means the way you do transparency is a little bit different, but it's actually much easier. So the idea is that the smaller this number gets, the more transparent my object is. And so that slowly decays as my plant dies. And each time my update goes round, we basically take away the age speed from the age. And if it gets down to close to zero, we kill the plant off. And that's my game mechanic. You've seen the code. You've seen it running. It's easy enough to understand. There's nothing much to it. There's no particular magic here. And we're all following this progression from I drew a cloud. I want to do things with it. And so next thing I want to mention is the accelerometer. Now, this lets you control the behavior of objects by tipping the phone. It's three axis, X, Y, Z, but just use X and Y, and you get a gamepad equivalent. They're returned in the range -1 to +1 in each axis. When you hold the phone flat like that, the X and the Y values are 0, and Z is at -1, because that's G effectively pulling it down. If you shake the phone a lot, then the value of G will start to go up and down. I got G up to about 3.5 by doing this, and then my nerve failed. So if I'd let go, I'd have killed the phone off. So if you want to make a shake the bottle to see if you can shake the champagne bottle kind of game, like you have on the Nintendos and things, you can do that easily, because you're just looking for big values of that. So as far as we're concerned, yeah. There's a slight complication, though. If you want to use accelerometer, you can't just pole it. Unlike the other devices, it's powered by events. So I have to bring in the sensors library from Silverlight, and I have to add the namespace, make it a bit easier to use. And then at this point, I can now create myself an accelerometer and bind to the events it creates. So games normally like to work by polling, where they'll go off and fetch stuff. But because of the way the phone works, to get accelerometer readings, I have to wait for it to tell me, hey, I've got a new number. And then you can respond to that, okay? It's not a biggie, because you just cache the number somewhere and have the update method pick it up. So here we go. This is my accelerometer. Make a new one. Bind to the event, changed event, and then start it running. And that's my game member, which is the thing. And you can stop the thing and start it, and away you go. When you get your reading changed, I have a little three-way vector, which I take the readings and I drop the value into. And I'm being multi-threaded aware, which is quite good for me, really, by locking this, because this will happen on a thread where the accelerometer is firing off interrupts, and my updates will be happening on a different thread. So it's conceivable that one would interrupt the other, and I might get X, Y, and Z values garbled. So this actually effectively locks the other thread out while it reads those values and sets them up. So that's how I handle the interrupts from a producing point of view. And from a consuming point of view, I just take those values and copy them into a return of a method, so I can easily read the thing at any point. And then away we go. And so now, yeah, little bit of physics. What I do is I have an acceleration vector, which I use to change the actual speed of the thing. So one of the things you have to do is sort of roll it up so that the player thinks it's behaving like a real game. And this is effectively the mass that you need to do that. I'm only using the X. I'm only tipping the thing in one axis for this particular game. And because I've got the phone in landscape mode, I have to pull in the Y one as opposed to the X one because of the way I'm actually reading the sensors. So it's a very, very simple physics model. I'll show you it on the phone in a second. In fact, that second has gone by. So here we go. Right, real phone deployment. It's time to show you a game that's working on the real phone. Otherwise, you'll think it'll never go. So here we go. Go back to my directory. Only two more demos after, or one more after this, and then we're good. I can head for the bar or something. So we're going to deploy to the device. And tip the clouds onto the thirsty plants before they fade away and die. Okay? So there you go. I'm not a great gardener. The difference between my garden and a cemetery is that in my garden, things are alive before they go into the ground. Okay, not funny. Okay, there's a friend of mine who's going out with a girl who's got X-ray eyes, but I've no idea what she sees in him. that is a good one. That I like. Let's deploy this thing before I have to use my final joke. I've still got some cheese books to give away. Deployment errors. Yeah, okay. That's because Robert's an idiot. I've got to unlock the phone and open it up. And now I can hit the go, and we're in business. So now it's deploying it, it's compiling it, bum, 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 bum. The phone is now firing up. If I press SROM E, which is that one, I think, then no, that one. There we go. This is my, if I tip the phone in different directions, you can see that the clouds start to head off. Tip it back, they'll eventually start to fall the other way. If you can see that, it's not really not wonderful, but there you go, and then they're going backwards and forwards. So I've actually got quite a nice build-up of speed now, so I'll tip it back the other way, and they'll come back. And so it's difficult to show tipping games on the Wolfram, because it you move the angle. But I have got a better game for the phone. These things are drifting along, and I can tip them along. So again, you have a basis now of a simple little kids game, which would work quite well. And so now if I go back to C, you can have my picture, and we can continue. So that all works, that's in the phone, and I'll stop you, and we'll go back to the slides. So you've got, there is a very famous game called Cheese Lander.
Cheese!
Okay. Just fight amongst yourselves. Who said cheese? You did, right, okay. And this side, who said cheese? No one wants to say, there's a guy at the back. You're very honest, this is great. There you go. You get one as well. That's it. I'm cheesed out now. That's it. No more cheese. You can pay attention, but what's the point, really? one of the things I thought I'd try and do, XNA transparency, it's fine. You guys have heard of Project Sunburst? The, oh gosh, what's the other part of the name? Crackdown Project Sunburst, where you're attacking things on the map. I thought, oh, I'll have me some of that. So what I want is, we're now using clouds again, but we're falling through clouds towards the ground. And the game mechanic now is I have to figure out where I'm falling on before I hit it. Okay? And so it turns out this is really easy to do on the phone, because Bing Maps will give me an image of the ground. And getting it into a texture is that. You make a web request to Bing Maps saying, okay, can I have the map for this location, please? When the request fires back, you just take the result stream and make a texture from it and slap it in your image. And so if you want to use map information in your games, it is dead easy. I couldn't believe how easy this was. And so now what I can do is I can make a cloud landing game. And so this is the final demo, and they've all worked so far, which is kind of worrying. So this is, again, you get the code for this. One thing, the code that I put up on my blog, I've taken out my Bing Maps API key, which is this magic piece of guacamole here. Now what that does is give me, no one write it down. That's fed into Bing to authenticate me against the Bing service. You can get these things for free. They've just signed up with an Xbox, with a Windows Live account, put it in your program. So what this is basically it says, I just make a RESTful web request to Bing to give me the map and then come back. And if I just, I can deploy this to the actual device because I'm feeling kind of brave. So my device, I'll just unlock. There we go. And then what I'll do is I'll deploy it and start it running and flip back to E, which is Mr. Wolfram. So now what you'll see is there are my clouds appearing, and then there should be a bang at some point. There it is. And what it's done now, if you look very carefully, is the clouds clear. Now, my transparency is not as great as it could be, but that actually is where we are. Now, it's taken the location information from the phone, built a Bing request, gone up to Bing, fetched the image, put it in a texture, and that's my game. If I was clever, I'd get a bigger texture than the screen size and then zoom into it as I'm falling towards the ground. And if I was really clever, I'd sort out my clouds so they came towards me. And so now I've got a free-fall skydiving game where basically you're skydiving on. And what you could do, again, very easy, you can pull pixels out of the texture and look at them. So I could say, you've got to hit a green field, mate, otherwise you're dead. And you have to try and land the thing on a piece of green grass somewhere on your map. But that was astonishingly easy to do. And what that phone is now showing you is the Mandalay Center, which is where we are, and that's the hotel, and that's the swimming pool. And so, again, not worth a round of applause, but I've grown up. I earned it. Again, all the code is there. Pull the code down, sign up for the Bing Maps API, and then start writing location-aware games this afternoon. It's that easy. Yes? I will put a link on my blog with that, if you go to robmiles.com. But if you look for Bing Maps key in any search engine, then you should be able to find it easy enough. I'll see you later. Is that okay? I'll have a look at it in a second. You later. I've got to keep moving forward. Right. Last bit is the money shot. Okay. You put the games on through the marketplace. You have to have an unlocked device to actually deploy games on. As a developer, you can actually unlock up to 3 devices for testing. This is all the same stuff that the Silverlight people and the XNA people will already know. $99 per year, free membership for students via DreamSpark. So if you are a student, I can't think of a reason why you should be writing games. You really should be out there. You might not make a fortune, but when you're going for interviews and you're pointing the interviewer at the games you put out there, which you've got stars against their names, that's got to help, okay? So you can do up to 3 devices as a developer. Students can unlock just one. $99 a year. I spend about 4 times that on video games at least. and I don't play them because I'm writing phone programs and playing around with coding. But then again, I am a kind of sad edge case, really. My wife quite likes it because it apparently, yes, it keeps me out of the way, but there you go. You can give away up to 100 applications. If you want to give free ones away, that's possible. Trial mode works extremely well. So you can have a trial mode which you can pick up so you can sell on straight from within the game. And so customers can do that from within your game if you want to do that. That works a treat. This is a submission process. There's a zap file, which is basically a zip archive with a manifest, and that contains all the stuff which then goes into Marketplace and gets pushed down to the phone. My students are getting turnaround of 2 or 3 days on Marketplace submissions. They're doing quite well. We did a game development contest about 3 weeks ago, and we've actually had 2 or 3 games gone up there as a result of that, and the students are getting quite excited about this using quite a bit of time. It's a fairly automatic approvals process, but people do actually play with your game. One of my games failed on the certification because of a mistake that I'd made, but the replies I got left me with the impression the guy had played my game and was telling me which menus were the defective ones, and so I fixed it, iterated round, and away we went. So the thing about this, though, from approvals is read the submission guidelines, because if you'd follow that process and follow that plot, you'll be absolutely fine. If you do that, then you get 70% of the cash, and Microsoft keep the rest, which actually isn't that much. If you meet someone and say, I'm going to give you 10 quid. No, I'm going to give you 5 quid. And they go, you mean swine. Where's my 5 quid? Not thanks for the 5 quid. Very strange. Human nature. You couldn't get this money any other way, so give Microsoft a bit. Bill Gates needs the money, apparently. If you're not from, or something, you get paid once you've earned $200. If you aren't from the US, it gets a bit tortuous in terms of getting your registration and your payment sorted, but you can still submit games while this is happening. So once you get in there, if you're a student and you go in via DreamSpark, then here's a tip for you. Submit something as soon as you've got registered, because that fires off the VeriSign process and gets you authenticated. So do that. I've got some blog posts about that, which I'll refer to you in a minute or two. You can also, if you're in the States, put ads in your games. And this is really, really easy. You basically have a pluggable game component you drop in, and you can then interrogate that to see when the player has clicked on the component. And you can stop your gameplay. Players click through from that to either a web page or a direct call to the advertiser, and this is all done for you. And they target the ads to actually fit the demographic of the person who's bought the phone and using it. And as far as you're concerned, it's a great way to monetize things if you don't think that people will pay money for your game. And so you get the SDK, which is a very small download. You include the libraries into your game. You register on the pub center and link it up so that when you publish games, these guys hook into that, and away you go. The test interface is very easy to use, so you can basically get it running and playing with it very, very easily. That's pubcentermicrosoft.com. It's only at the moment available for people in the US, which is kind of sad, but there you go. I guess they'll roll it out later on when they get the chance. So, what to do next? Okay, create.msdn.com is your new best friend in terms of developing, because that's the starting point for registering for the app store and getting into Marketplace App Store. Ooh, who said that? Then you can sign up on Pub Center, and you must read my blog, which is robmiles.com. If you go to robmiles.com/demos, then all my demo slides will be there as well. I'm going to be drifting down to the O'Reilly booth where they've got some copies of my book, which you can, I think we're going to give some away. I'm going to sign some at some point. I'll tweet about that. Anyone tweeted on Twitter about cheese Windows phone? Oh, we have one. Excellent. 2, 3. Oh, fantastic. Okay. I'll try to get you all books. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a great time. If you like playing with code, if you're in this business because you like writing programs and enjoy seeing what you can do with the code that you write, then for heaven's sake, get into this, because it really is great fun. And My wife comes upstairs, and I'm sitting there just bursting clouds and grinning like an idiot. And she goes away quite happy. You know, it's safer than lots of other things I could be doing. And so it all goes very well. So before I stop, though, does anyone have any questions? Yep, sorry, you're the front side.
Can you use link with an XNA?
The question is, can you use link with an XNA? Well, you can use link within a Windows Phone app. I mean, yes, the answer is of course you can. One of the great things about the phone as compared with Xbox 360 is that you aren't sandboxed. Your XNA game can make network connections. It can go and fetch stuff off the web. It can do link, so you could have a big chunk of XML that's got your game levels sitting in your local storage and bring that in. Yes, you can do. Answer to the question is simple, yes. Yeah? How do you handle... In XNA at the moment, you have to build your own menus, which is a bit tiresome, but that might change. But there are lots of frameworks out there which you can get to help you with that. Yeah? There are if you register with Xbox Live, yes, you can. So the games that you produce can be the basis of achievements. Yes, you can do that. You have to actually go through a process with them to authenticate and get inside their tent, as it works. Otherwise, anyone could be flogging thousands of achievements for nothing, but it is possible to do that, yes.
Xbox.com/dev.
The question, by the way, was can you post achievements? I'm sorry, I should have made that clear. Yeah? Create.msdn.com is the place where you go for everything. Now, AppHub was the old name for it. No, my brain's gone wrong. That's old slide. No, hang on. Brain not working. That's where you should go. Trust me. I'm tall and I'm English, so I'm trustworthy. Any other questions? Yes, sir? The question is, how do I do a rolling background? I wrote a game called Destruction Golf that has that. I made it very simply and cheaply. I had a long, thin texture, which had my hills on it. And one of the things you can do with sprite batch is you can transform the drawing operation when it does it. So all I did was make a transformation matrix with an X offset value and just panned across. So if you get hold of Destruction Golf from one of my demos, then you'll find that you hit the ball, it goes up, then the landscape tracks. So your texture can be bigger than the window the phone gives you, and then you can then just move within that by effectively transforming your draw coordinates. Very easy to do. Downloadable content. You can pull in textures. So the question is, can you do downloadable content? You can pull in textures, and if you have a scripting engine that's XML-powered, say, absolutely yes. You can't modify the code that's running. That kind of thing's not possible because it's a sandboxed managed code environment. But you could easily pull down DLC, yes. You couldn't make a new class. You couldn't pull a DLL down and link that in because that would be very naughty. The question is, why was I using flags? Why wasn't I removing it from the list of draw objects? The answer to that question is because it's easier to show flags. There's no reason why you can't do that. You can't use for each to go through. Then you have to use for I equals whatever, because otherwise it blows up if the object removes itself. But that way you have to have basically a starting list and a game in progress list, and you copy everything from the starting one into the progress one for the level, play it, and then reset it. But the answer is, you can do that. It's easy. In my experience, it doesn't make a huge difference either way. Yep. The question is, this is a loop rather than an event model. Does it affect battery life? They've halved the rate at which it updates compared to the 360 down to 30 hertz. They're very careful about what they do and how they manage the draw behavior. I've not had any problems running XNA games for long periods of time on my phone, so as far as I'm aware, it works okay. Yeah. Sorry, yeah?
Just want to talk about,
Best practices for garbage collection and the heap. If you're right up against it, avoid for each, because that makes objects. If you do want to actually, what Robert does is I don't create and destroy anything. I have like a kind of taxman approach to my memory and my resource. How much have you got? I'll take all of that, please. So my program starts up. It grabs all the resources it needs. Maybe I'll have flags in them to turn them on and off, but I'll never destroy anything. Absolutely. There are some issues with the present version of the phone in terms of not knowing quite when Mr. Garbage Man's going to come around and make your life miserable. But my approach, generally speaking, is for a given level, I'll basically just get everything in there and I'll set flags rather than kill things. Yes? The question is, are there any patterns like model view controller for game design? I just have an object model like the one you've seen, the draw and the update behaviors that percolate through all of them, and that seems to work fine for me. I've not gone beyond that. Most of the games I've made have been fairly simple sprite-based affairs, and it works fine for that. You don't have the concept in the game of events firing and triggering off other events. That's not how games are, as far as X&A is concerned. You basically tear the whole thing down and redraw it when the clock goes tick. So you don't. The good news is that that's what the hardware is really excellent at. So it goes real fast. The bad news is you have to do all that. Okay. So I think I'm about at the end stops. Thank you for being a fantastic audience.